Mr. Dias, I've had a chance to think about your first interview and I'd like to follow up on a few points. We spoke about various people whom you'd met as a student before the war. To add to what you said last time, can we come back to Professor Hansen, who you mentioned you knew quite well?
Yes, of course. When I first came here, Professor Hansen wasn't around. I think he was a prisoner of war. I only got to know him after he came back from that. And then I got to know him really rather well.
Any specific recollections?
No, except that he had the habit of going on lecturing after 1 o'clock, but he was such a good lecturer that the audience didn't mind at all, being deprived of their lunch, more or less.
He used to simply continue.
What?
He used to continue beyond...
Oh, he went beyond 1 o'clock. As I say, he was a very, very good lecturer indeed.
Nobody got up and walked out.
Not to my knowledge. I wasn't there, of course. It was really rather awkward sometimes. These people had other engagements. But still, to my knowledge, nobody did walk out.
Interesting. So, you also mentioned Professor Winfield. He had a great influence upon you.
Oh, yes. I liked Winfield very, very much indeed. I got to know him extremely well.
You wrote your book was in some ways a sequel to his book, your book on Tort.
Yes.
To some extent he mentored you in that way.
In the sense that he never took supervisions or anything like that, which I attended. But he was a very kind man, and I know he was. He took an interest in me because he knew I was fond of the law of torts.
And this perhaps nurtured your fondness for the subject?
Only indirectly. I used to attend his lectures, of course. And then subsequently, after I came back as a lecturer, I know he was greatly tickled at the thought that I was also fond of the law of torts like he was. Yes.
He was someone you could have discussions with.
Well, I don't think I ever really had discussions with him on the subjects, but still. Yes, I knew him. He lectured to me when I was a student, and I always had a great admiration for him.
So we'll move on now to new territory. In fact, the main part of your career, the 31 years you spent as a member of the law faculty at Cambridge University from 1951 to 81. So, if we may, I'm going to ask you about this in two parts. Today, your memories of the faculty and the staff, and in the next interview, we'll talk about your research, your teaching and your writing. And we have to remember that at your time in the faculty, this was during its occupation of what is called the Old Schools, adjacent to Senate House Passage, when the faculty in the Squire Law Library shared what by modern standards would be considered very cramped and inadequate quarters. In comparison with your student days, can you recall any major changes after the war in the library and the Faculty of Law?
That's a difficult question to answer, because when I first entered the Squire Law Library as an undergraduate, it continued in that fashion until I think they moved. But I don't know that there was any major change, no.
No large increases in student and staff numbers immediately post-war?
Oh, yes. The student numbers, yes, because there were all the returning warriors from the war, and they were, and also people whose careers had been interrupted by the war and who came back to complete their studies. So it was very crowded as far as undergraduates were concerned.
So Professor Lipstein said that although it was very cramped in the old library, he preferred it to the new library because it was so cosy. Did you find it was a congenial place to work?
Oh, very congenial indeed, yes. I always remembered Dr. Lipstein had his own particular room. It was an understood thing by everybody that that was Lipstein's room.
Did any other of the lecturers have their special corners where they worked?
Well, now let me see if I can remember. Well, Dr. Ellis Lewis, of course, he was then librarian, and he had his own particular room. But apart from that, I don't think there was anybody who had a particular room. No.
Did you do most of your teaching in your college?
Well, yes. Of course, I was then, I hadn't joined Magdalen then. I did most of my teaching in Trinity Hall, and I must say, the hall was extremely kind in making a room available for me to do my teaching. So,
wonderful.
And that was very kind of them.
So, when you returned as a lecturer in 1951, you would have had a different professional relationship with the staff you once knew as a student. You originally knew them as a youngster, and now here you were back amongst them as colleagues.
That's true.
How did these established academics treat you as a young lecturer? You were about 30 years of age. What influence did they have upon you? For example, Professor Wade, he was a lecturer on your arrival, but a Downing professor by 1951.
Well, when I first came, Professor Wade was Emlyn Wade, and he had known my father before the First World War, and he was extremely kind. And I remember he's telling me all sorts of stories about their life, you know, the pre-First World War.
Delightful.
Indeed, yes. So now, who else was there?
There was Professor Duff, who was, when you first came as a student, was a lecturer, but by 1951 was Regius Professor.
That's true, yes. Well, yes, Professor Duff. I must say so with all due respect that he was not a very good lecturer. And as an undergraduate, although I started attending his lectures, I, along with quite a number of others, gave up attending the lectures simply because we didn't really feel we were getting much out of them. And of course, he was a Romanist, and I was very interested in Roman law myself. But apart from that, I don't think we had very much in common. No.
Professor Bailey, who...
Professor...
He was a lecturer when you arrived.
Professor Bailey.
He was a reader in 1951 and later became the Rouse Ball Professor.
That's right, yes.
Do you have any recollections of how... Well, your relationship with him when you were first appointed?
Well, my relationship was really not so much with him as with his wife, who was a brilliant tennis player. She was a pre-war Dutch international.
Fascinating.
Indeed. And we used to play tennis together quite a lot.
So you must have been pretty good.
Oh, I don't know.
Did they have their own tennis court, or were they...
Oh, no, we played on the St. John's tennis courts. Yes.
That sounds lovely. There was Professor Jackson, who was a lecturer in 1951, and soon after that, Downing Professor.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Jackson used to supervise me, along with others, from Trinity Hall, in John's, in his rooms, yes. And he was a very good lecturer indeed, yes. But apart from that, I don't know that I had any further contacts with him afterwards. Not really, no.
Now, Professor Lauterpacht was already the Ural Professor when you started as a student, and when you became a lecturer, he was still in the chair.
Yes, that's right. Well, when I first started reading law, Professor Lauterpacht was in America, and he didn't come back to England, wartime conditions being what they were, until about the second term, and he was a very good lecturer. But the most remarkable thing about him was that he always lectured without a single note, impromptu, and no hesitation, nothing. Remarkable.
Oh, extraordinary.
Yes.
Do you know what he was doing in America?
No, I'm afraid I don't. No, I can't remember. No. If I ever knew, I've forgotten now.
So, after the war, the faculty expanded fast, and when you arrived, there were many young academics who had not been long in place. Also, in the years shortly after your arrival, there was a steady influx. These people must all have been influential upon you in various ways, and if I run through a list of some of your contemporaries, I wonder if you can recall impressions of them, how they perhaps influenced you, and whether you have any interesting anecdotes or stories about them.
Well, I'll do my best, but yes, what are they?
Well, we'll start with Mr. Goodison, who was a lecturer in 1950 and later became a reader in English law.
Yes, yes, Dick Goodison, that's right. He was one of the nicest and kindest of persons. And I had a great deal to do with him because I used to supervise undergraduates from St. Catharines, and he was the Lord on there. So I had a great deal to do with him.
Robbie Jennings was a lecturer from 1950 to 55. He didn't become a reader, but was promoted straight to the Ewell chair.
That's right, yes. Robbie Jennings, well, there again, I didn't have a great deal to do with him, because Trinity Hall was not in the orbit of Jesus College, and so I was never supervised by him. Nor was I ever lectured to by him.
He was a lecturer with you, though, in from 1951 to 55.
He was indeed, yes.
And
yes.
As a colleague, you had no real...
No real contact with him, no.
Clive Parry, who became a reader in 1960, he was a lecturer in your time.
Yes, now he was really a character par excellence. For some strange reason, he seemed to like me very much, and I had a great deal to do with him, as it were, socially and all the rest of it.
according to Professor Lipstein, he could be very critical.
Well, that was part of his image. He was like that, but there again, he was an extremely kind man. And very helpful.
He seems to have had many devotees. If he took you on, then people loved him, in short.
Absolutely, yes, indeed, yes. He did, yes, he was like that.
Well, Professor Lipstein was extremely fond of him, describes him as his great friend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can imagine that.
So, no sort of specific recollections of Clive Parry?
Well, I've got plenty of recollections, but they're all haphazard and higgledy-piggledy. Again, I used to do a lot of supervising for Downing College, and had a lot to do with him through that connection. But apart from that, I can't recall anything specific now.
Sir William Wade was a lecturer in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
and in 79 he became Ralph's Ball Professor.
Well, now, he was a great tennis player, and I used to play a lot of tennis with him.
Really?
Yes. Bill Wade, yes. I'm trying to think up all sorts of things about him. In fact, apart from playing tennis a great deal with him, I don't know that I had any other real point of contact with him. And
so it seems to me that, as I said earlier, you were a very good tennis player.
Who said that?
I'm surmising.
Oh, I don't know about that. Well, it depends what your standard of good tennis player is. I won a tennis blue.
Oh.
In my undergraduate days. But nothing very special, I'm afraid.
So Professor Milsom was a fellow lecturer in 54, and he left the faculty and he returned as professor in the late 70s. He still lives in Cambridge today.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There was a little coterie of persons, of which I was a member, partly Trinity Hall, partly Trinity, and I got to know Toby Milsom in that connection. He was really one of the most brilliant students, I think, that the faculty produced over that period.
Mm.
And he made a rather disastrous marriage, didn't he? But that didn't in any way affect his relationship with other members of the faculty or anything like that.
Or his work.
Huh?
Or his work.
Or his work, no. I'm not quite sure. Is he still alive?
He's still alive.
Oh, he is? Yes. Oh, right.
So, I think he comes into the faculty occasionally, not often.
I see. Ah. Right. Yes. I haven't seen him for a great many years now.
So, Mr. Pritchard, you might remember, joined 3 years after you did.
That's right, yes.
He still comes into the faculty quite a bit.
I'm sure he does, yes. I think he succeeded me as secretary of the faculty.
Oh.
So, yes. There again, my connection, chief connection with him was because I used to supervise a number of Keyes undergraduates, and
He was also, he is very fond of Professor Lipstein.
He is?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, who wouldn't be?
Mr. Yale became an assistant lecturer 3 years after your arrival.
Mm-hmm.
Any memories of him?
He was always very quiet and reserved. And there again, I used to do a lot of supervising for his pupils, and it was in that connection that I got to know him.
G.L. Williams was a lecturer in 55, and then he became a professor from 67 to 77.
Daniel Williams.
That's right.
Yes. Now, he was, I suppose, one would describe as one of my hero boys, because he was one of the most brilliant lawyers I think the faculty has produced. And we greatly enjoy attending his lectures. And but again, apart from that, I had no particular connection with him.
Someone else, well, Professor Lipstein was very fond of him.
Daniel Williams, yes.
Professor Jonowitz arrived in 1956 as assistant lecturer, and he stayed on until 72 when he became a reader, and then professor in 76. Mm-hmm. He's still around.
He's still around,
very
yes,
much so, indeed. Yes.
I really got to know him through his father and his mother, because old Professor Jolowich was a person whom at whose feet I used to sit, and I greatly enjoyed his lectures and all the rest of it. But Tony Jolowich, there again, didn't have much contact with him.
Was his mother also an academic?
Sorry, he was.
His mother. Was Professor Tony Jolowitz's mother an academic? You mentioned that you remembered his mother.
Oh, yes. Well, it was really through his father and mother, really. I don't think she was an academic. I may be wrong there. I don't think so.
Of course, his father. So I even remember being inspired as a student of Roman law.
Oh, yes.
His father's
indeed.
Wonderful book.
Very much so, yes. Yes.
So Elie Lauterpacht became a lecturer in 1958 and a reader in 81, then became a director of the Lauterpacht Research Center.
That's right.
Did you have anything to do with him?
Only rather vaguely, not particularly intimate or anything like that. I had, I'm afraid, lost much of my interest in international law, because I always regarded it as a bit of a bogus subject. One takes it very seriously. And Elie Lauterpacht, there again, apart from that, very vague contacts.
So there was a large influx of staff in the early 60s. We've left the 50s now. Did this affect you in any way? Was it occasioned by a large increase in student numbers?
Only that it involved a very great deal of supervising, because most of them were people whose careers had been interrupted by the war, and of course all the returning warriors came back to complete their studies. So
must have seemed a bit more crowded.
Oh, very much so, yes.
One of the lecturers who arrived in the 60s, early 60s, was later knighted, Sir Derek Bowett. He was a reader in 1976 and professor from 81 to 91.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recollections of him?
Derek Bowett, yes, he was a pupil of mine.
Good heavens.
Oh, yes. I remember him as an undergraduate.
He was from Manchester.
That's right, yes.
I think he
excelled
as an international lawyer and was one of Lauterbach's prize students.
Yes, well, yes. I can understand that. Yes, he was indeed.
Well, he lives in Hills Road. He's obviously still around these days.
Good.
Professor Gareth Jones was an assistant lecturer in 1962, and then in the early 70s, he went straight from a lecturer to Downing Professor. Do you remember him?
Oh, yes, I do remember him. But again, rather superficially. I didn't have much contacts with him. But
he's also obviously still around. I think he lives in Selwyn Road.
Does he?
Yes.
I see, yes. Yeah, I haven't seen him for some years now.
Mr. Turpin became a lecturer in 1962. Or assistant lecturer and lecturer the next year?
Well, he was a pupil of mine.
Oh.
He came from South Africa and he used to come to me for supervisions in Roman Dutch law, which is the legal system out in South Africa, and also supervisions in Roman law and jurisprudence. Yes. I got to know him really rather well socially as well.
Was this in the faculty?
In the faculty, yes.
He's a very nice man.
Oh, extremely. Charming, courteous.
Yes.
Sort of old world politeness about him.
That's right.
Which was charming.
Yes. He excelled in public law.
Mm-hmm, that's
great,
right.
Great constitutional lawyer.
That's right.
And,
yes.
His textbook is one of the major, the core textbooks in the constitutional law course.
Yes.
Cases and Materials.
Yes.
Ivor Jennings was Downing Professor for a short spell. Do you know why this was? Just a short time that he was Downing Professor.
I think he was on the staff before I really started my legal career. But then he later came back and he was Master of Trinity Hall. So it was in that connection that I got to know him much better. And he'd also been out in Sri Lanka, I think, for a great many years. So we used to exchange a lot of Sri Lankan gossip.
Yes. So Tony Weir arrived in 1964 as assistant lecturer. And then he was promoted to reader in 1979.
Yes.
He lives in Trinity, although he's retired.
Yes. There again, I haven't had much contact with him, and certainly not for some years now.
Certainly very highly regarded these days, the last 10 years that I've been at the Squire Library. I've always been aware of what a luminary he is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Law of taught.
That's right,
other
yes.
Things. Yes. So there was yet another large influx in the late 60s, and people like Mr. John Collier, John Hopkins, D.G. Williams, Heppel, amongst others, joined. Do you have any idea why the department expanded so quickly in the late 60s?
I'm not quite sure why, but I should imagine it's because of the very large increase in the numbers of undergraduates reading the subject, and also the expansion of the number of subjects that were being introduced, and they want a new lecturers.
So what sort of new subjects, as you recall?
Well, the whole syllabus was revised completely during the time that I was secretary of the faculty. We had TRIPOS reform. It became a real bogey with all of us, and as a result of these, new subjects were introduced, and we had to find teaching for them.
Do you remember any of these subjects? These new subjects?
Well, yes. It was a hopeless job, I'm afraid. They had the idea, I think largely inspired by Professor Hansen, of having two goes at the same subject, sort of. And we had the second year introduction to this, that, and the other, followed in the third year with the same subject at a deeper level. And that was, I don't know that I ever favored that idea, but still that was introduced, and it lasted for quite a time.
Interesting. It reminds me of when I did my law degree, we had contract in the second year and then advanced contract in the third year.
No, that's sort of the introduction to contract and tort. And then there was contract in the third year and tort. It seemed an awful waste of time to spend 2 years at this same subject. But still, there it was.
So that perhaps explains in part why so many new people were taken on.
I think that was part of the reason, certainly.
Do you remember Mr. John Collier, who joined in 1967?
Oh, yes, yes, he was a pupil of mine. Collier, yes. Again, he was at Emmanuel, wasn't he?
Was he not at Queen's?
Collier?
Yes.
Oh, well, perhaps...
I'm not sure.
You're probably
I'm
right.
Sure.
No, what do I remember about old Collier? I used to supervise him, and I meet him even now and again. We always have a joke together and all the rest of it. But apart from that, I don't know that there is anything very special that I remember about him.
So it fell to him to write the book on conflict of laws.
That's right, yes. He was a conflict man.
So John Hopkins joined as assistant lecturer in 67 and then became a lecturer in 1970. Of course, he's still around as well.
Oh, very much so, yes.
So long ago.
Oh, yes. Well, I used to do a lot of supervising for Downing, and I got to know John Hopkins very well. Also, Mrs. Hopkins. That would be charming. I should have thought she was one of the most brilliant students that the faculty has produced.
Still do come in quite frequently.
Yes. I'd imagine that, yes.
She's very actively involved at Girton.
That's right, yes.
We then come to Professor D.G. Williams.
David Williams?
Yes.
Yes.
He had a meteoric rise, lecturer in 69, reader 76, and then 84, Rouse Ball Professor. Recollections?
Oh, well, yes, I mean, he too was a pupil of mine as an undergraduate. There again, very pleasant memories about him, but again, nothing very special, I don't think.
Since he retired, he gives lectures, public lectures, and he's a very good raconteur.
That's right, yes.
Nice sense of humour. Professor Stein came as Regius Professor in 69.
Yes, he came from Aberdeen, was it?
Was it?
Or from Scottish University.
I think so. Either that or Liverpool.
Oh, maybe, you're probably right, yes. Who are we talking about? Professor Peter Stein, yes. Well, of course, he's great interest in Roman law, which is also one of my subjects. And we used to have a lot of discussions about Roman law together. But apart from that, I don't know that there was anything very special that I remember about him. Yeah.
And then, lastly in this category, Professor Hippel, who came in 1969 as assistant lecturer.
Excuse me.
Just pause. As we were saying about Professor Hippel, in 1969 he became assistant lecturer.
That's right. I supervised him, and I remember him very well indeed.
I didn't realise that he was a student here.
I think he came as an affiliated student.
Must have been from Johannesburg.
That's right, from Johannesburg. But since I've been to South Africa quite frequently, we used to exchange a lot of recollection. In fact, he used to tell me an awful lot about the goings-on in South Africa.
Because he was one of Mandela's council, I believe.
He was indeed, yes.
Fascinating. So you say you've been to South Africa a few times. Was that for a holiday or in an official capacity?
Not a holiday, official capacity. I was invited out to give courses of lectures at various universities in South Africa, mainly the University in Johannesburg, but other locations as well. So,
what period was this?
My late 1950s, I think.
So, sort of the first decade, if you like, of your...
That's right, yes.
Yes.
Or maybe early 60s as well.
Yes. So it must have been fascinating.
Oh, it was always interesting.
Yes. We now come towards the end of your time in the faculty, and in 1975, the first of the Arthur Goodhart visiting professors arrived. This was Professor Kahn Freund. Do you recall the circumstances of the establishment of this visitor's chair?
No, I don't, I'm afraid. It's after my time as secretary, and I really didn't get to know Kahn Freund very well, so I have very few, in fact, no recollections about him at all.
So, other new arrivals were Judge Elias, who came as an assistant lecturer in 1975.
That's right, yes. There again, rather vague, not very many contacts.
Marcusinus arrived in 1975. He was a lecturer by 79, and of course you collaborated with him on three textbooks.
That's right.
So you must have had quite a bit to do with him before he left.
Oh, indeed I did, yes, very much so, yes.
Did he go to University College, or was it Oxford?
I'm not sure, but I think it was University College.
And then Professor Allett, who arrived in 1976 and became a lecturer in 1980.
I knew him very well indeed, but I had very few contacts with him.
Over those three decades, what were the most profound changes in the faculty in the way that law was taught?
That is very difficult to answer because there were different styles of lecturing. Quite a few people still adhere to the old-fashioned type of lecturing.
Which was?
Which was a straightforward harangue from the lecturer. The others used to conduct it more or less as a discussion group. Again, it's very difficult to focus my recollections because I never attended these sessions. But still, all I can say is that the undergraduates, whom I was still supervising, they seemed reasonably happy.
What was your style of lecturing?
Oh, the old-fashioned, straightforward type of lecturing.
I think if I, as a student, would prefer that.
I don't know.
I would rather, you know, be told.
Well, yes. Well, of course, we hadn't much choice.
So, what, if any, were the major changes in emphasis in legal issues with which the faculty had to cope?
Legal issues?
Either domestic or internationally.
I don't think there were any. At least not that I can remember offhand. No.
And did the increasing overcrowding affect your accommodation personally in the faculty?
I didn't have any accommodation. I used to visit the Squire Law Library, but I didn't have a room or anything like that. No, it's...
So, you mentioned the Squire Law Library. Were there any significant changes in the way it was run and its effectiveness over this period?
It was still in the old Squire, in the old schools. No, I think towards the end of the period we are talking about, there was all this talk about moving to the new site, and people weren't very interested in trying to improve or tinker with the existing setup in the old Squire. No, there wasn't anything very special.
And then, finally, what are your most enduring memories of your time in the faculty?
Oh. Well, except to say that I enjoyed every minute of it. I used to like lecturing. And, of course, the comradeship of the faculty members, especially people like Clive Perry and Kurt Lipstadt. Apart from that, I enjoy it very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Dyers.
Not at all. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Next time we can talk about your work and your research. And your writing.
That'll be a pretty thin interview, I should think.
I don't think so.
Yeah.